Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Brian Bonner to the broadcast. Brian's the Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Texas Instruments, a $13 billion semiconductor company with more than 30,000 employees worldwide. Brian also sits on the company's strategic leadership team. Prior to his current role, Brian held many roles in a number of non-IT positions, such as Vice President Worldwide Mass Marketing and Acquisition Integration at Texas Instruments. He's also held general management, sales, and product development roles, and was responsible for product strategy and development, as well as revenue generation after joining the company in 1995. Prior to joining Texas Instruments, Brian began his career at Chrysler Corporation. Brian is an advisory board member for Gemini Israel Funds. He's also served as the former board member of the Dallas Museum of Nature and Science and the Midland Chamber of Commerce. Brian holds a Bachelor of Engineering degree in Electrical Engineering, as well as an MSE in Electrical Engineering from the University of Michigan, and an MBA in Marketing and Finance from Duke University's Fuqua School of Business. I recently caught up with Brian in his office in the Dallas area, and our conversation covered world-class IT principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discussed Brian's posts in many different functional areas of major companies before becoming CIO, his strategic planning process, and the facets of his past experience that lent themselves well to becoming a board-level CIO, as well as a variety of other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open-source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Well, Brian Bonner, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Brian, I thought we would begin with a bit of background of your current role. You are the Chief Information Officer at Texas Instruments, and I wonder if you could just paint for our listeners a bit of a context here as to the substance of that role.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. I'm the CIO for Texas Instruments, and I manage a central IT organization that supports all aspects of IT for our $12 billion company. We have locations throughout the world supporting manufacturing, sales, and product development. And in this role, I have about 1,100 people reporting to me, and we are responsible for factory floors, designs in the data centers, chip design as well as software design, our web presence, and all of the necessary business functions like our ERP systems and email and other support functions across the company.
We found it so interesting in preparing for our conversation and some of our past conversations to learn more about your non-traditional path to the CIO role. Can you talk a bit about your own personal history and what led you to the current position several years ago?
I think the key ingredient for anybody working in technology is to have a curious mind. And I think I was guilty of that throughout my career, where I've been interested in learning new things. So I had a non-traditional career for sure. I started out with a master's in electrical engineering and actually worked in another industry as an automotive engineer, and then came to TI and went into technical sales of all things, where I was actually selling technology to customers and progressed to becoming a sales manager. And then from there, I had an opportunity to make a leap to become an engineering manager in one of our major sites, and took that move and went to a totally different function and advanced from there to running a couple of profit and loss centers, and became a global business manager responsible for a collection of businesses that were somewhere around a couple hundred million dollars in size, and did that for several years. And then I got asked to go build our mass marketing capability, which was really an exciting opportunity to take some of the things I had learned in sales as well as in business and put together the infrastructure and processes to take care of our customers worldwide. And just as I was really starting to enjoy that, I got the opportunity to go do two acquisition integrations, two companies, one in New Hampshire, one near Chicago, and was asked to be the interim leader of those companies as we folded them into Texas Instruments. And as that was winding down, I was asked to take over the role as CIO for the company, which was something that I didn't feel like I was at all prepared for and had never had on my career path. But after talking with our CEO, I realized that all the things I had done prior to this role had me very well prepared to step into the role and run it like a business function. So that's the path that I took to get here. And I think that, again, people that come in and do these types of roles have to have a curious mind and want to learn new things. So I don't think it's at all unusual that I ended up in this role. I think it came from some of my curiosity about technology and how business operates.
If you think about the stereotypes of the IT department, which hopefully are becoming less the actual norm of IT departments and CIOs who lead them. Historically, it has been a support organization, an order-taking organization of sorts, if you will, a less strategic organization. And of course, you've just walked through a series of past responsibilities that were very much customer-facing. You mentioned the fact that you had profit and loss responsibilities. You know, these are not the traditional facets or descriptions one would attribute to the IT department. And so I wonder, you know, as you contemplated the move to become CIO, obviously a very senior level of the organization and a C title indeed, was there any misgivings about the possibility of this being sort of a step backward away from that customer-facing aspect, the P&L responsibilities? How did you feel about that?
I think as I looked more into the role, I realized how important those backgrounds were for success and saw that there was a huge opportunity to continue using those skills that I had developed and use them sometimes with customers. We've done a lot of partnerships with customers over the years where it's been a business process that finally ends up grounded in some innovative technology, but also with our supplier base and our internal customers. So the things that I learned as business manager and as a sales leader were very much spot on for looking at how do you collaborate with others, how do you look at solving a complex problem, and how do you drive ownership across the organization.
And as you mentioned, it was an opportunity for you to think of IT and to develop a team that, to a greater extent, thought of it as any other kind of business function within the organization. Was there a cultural change necessary with the team that you found yourself leading upon taking this role in having that team think more like another one of the business functions that you'd already led?
Yeah, very much so. I think IT at the time was kind of going through that transition where they were moving from doing a lot of back office activity to really becoming in the forefront for helping business enablement. And one of the quotes I used very early on with my team was that everybody in the organization, whether you're in IT or anywhere else in the company, needs to understand how we get paid. And from there, I went on and explained to the organization that we don't sell IT. IT is a tool that's used to enable us to be a world-class semiconductor company and support our customers worldwide with their ability to find products, buy products, and have products shipped to them on time and support it with all the other activity that goes around a full product portfolio. So having said that, there were folks that still viewed their role as kind of a gatekeeper, and they had some of the criteria backwards in terms of how they were approaching the business. You know, they were telling the business what they were going to get versus listening to what the business needed and partnering with them to figure out how we could best do that in a safe, secure, and scalable way. So we had to build the organization, build a culture, but it actually was kind of infectious as people came to realize that, boy, we get invited to meetings, we're learning about business, we're working on things that people at the top level in the company are talking about. So it very quickly became a pull strategy where people began to understand the value proposition of what IT could bring and how that slight change in behavior could have so much impact in how the company succeeded.
In your past roles, Brian, you certainly gained a great appreciation of what made the company successful, its customers, and the like. And I wonder, now that you're CIO, are you still involved in sales to any degree? Obviously, the person on the other side of the table in those equations oftentimes are very tech-savvy themselves, needless to say. And I wonder, are there aspects of your role as CIO that have given you a different appreciation, the extent to which you are still involved in some of those very same either sales calls or customer contacts of various kinds?
typically don't get involved in sales calls. It's usually after the sale that I get involved in terms of collaborating either in the engineering space or in the product planning space. But it's definitely a flex team approach where the account manager still is the one responsible for managing the customer. Our business leaders have a number of things that they care about in terms of the commercial agreements. And then from a process standpoint, IT can help put together a plan that helps automate and provide scalable ways for us to take care of the existing business, but also if we're successful, and this is the really key part, is if we do this well, it makes it easier for the customer to give us more business.
Another really interesting aspect of your career path, especially your recent career path, Brian, has been that you've joined the boards of a number of organizations, Copper Mobile, Gemini, Israel Ventures. You're also on the board of the Museum of Nature and Science in Dallas. I wonder, as you think about your experience in each of those, what aspects of your role as a CIO has been of particular advantage to you as well as to those companies, and the extent to which you can draw comparisons or provide insights to chief information officers who would wish to follow in your footsteps, what advice would you give them as they contemplate this possibility?
First part of your question about leveraging my experiences as a CIO, I think that's very important. And I'm currently not on the Museum of Nature and Science anymore. I've rolled off that, but still active with Gemini and Copper Mobile. I think the areas there that a CIO brings is really the breadth of business processes that they understand and also the connectedness of those processes. I think some of the other functional experts that participated on boards have very deep knowledge in a particular discipline, but they sometimes don't necessarily connect the dots to see how the various pieces work together or should work together for a company that's trying to build a robust capability. So I think that's one of the bigger things that being a CIO has helped me with. The other thing, frankly, is really kind of role of a board member. We're there to help set strategy and review business performance and look out for the interests of the shareholders. And I think as a CIO, you really develop some of those skills to ask those types of questions because there's usually several levels of depth behind everything we work on. So I believe that the preparation for being a good CIO also prepares you for being a good board member.
What do you draw from those experiences of being on the board that you used to your advantage back at Texas Instruments?
Oh, that's a great question, Peter. A lot of things. One, you're able to get glimpses of how other management structures work, other teams, both functionally and performance-wise behave. I think that from a personal standpoint, that helps me develop more range in my engagement with different people. So I think from a personal development standpoint, that's been very helpful. The other thing that has been very helpful for me is the exposure to new technologies. So with Gemini, they look at investing in startups. That's an opportunity for me as an advisory board member to see some of the activity that these startups are working on and see if that's technology we need inside Texas Instruments to help us get to the next level.
And I wonder also, as we talked about before, you didn't grow up in an IT department. You, again, were involved in marketing and sales, had P&L responsibilities. And these, in some ways, are more the common denominators in terms of the experiences of people who traditionally populate boards. So I wonder, to what extent are those the essential ingredients to gaining board membership, in addition to some of the advantages that you mentioned from having been or currently sitting as a chief information officer?
I think we're all kind of a summation of our experiences, and I definitely haven't forgotten what it's like to be on the other side of the desk or to be working on product development, and I think that definitely helps me. I think the emerging twist that is starting to make CIOs even more valuable for being on boards, whether or not they've had these other experiences that I have, is just the trends that are happening in IT with things like big data and the ability to do incredibly complex analytics to find things that were unknown before that can be a business advantage. the utilization of cloud computing to give you quick scale and reduce the costs for a company. And then, of course, the ever-increasing cybersecurity threats that every company is facing these days.
So in some ways, the ascending trends in business, so many of them have significant IT implications to those. And those CIOs who've mastered some of these realms that you've just described, big data, analytics, cloud computing, cybersecurity, just to rename the ones that you have, in addition to perhaps some others associated with those people who have particularly poignant perspectives on those are in some ways very well suited to come to the fore in terms of board leadership as well.
Yes, and I think it's a little bit different than the traditional demographics of a board where you typically would have a CFO, maybe a CEO, an attorney, maybe people from a different industry and people from academics. The CIO has a very unique perspective on these areas that could really help a company guide themselves through some of the decisions that they have to make. So it's a very complementary skill, and it's a skill that boards should avail themselves of when they're thinking about the mixture of the board. Rather than bringing on a second CFO as a board member, think about enablement of all the functions across the organization and look at how much of it's being made possible with IT and what are the opportunities and risks associated with that. And I think that's one of the values that a well-rounded CIO could bring to most boards these days, since that tends to be an underrepresented discipline.
A lot of people who are very busy executives, present company included, many of them choose, the extent to which they have the choice, they are blessed with the choices, choose to join boards that are in their general vicinity. And your past membership with the Museum of Nature and Science in Dallas, as well as Copper Mobile, would certainly tick the boxes there. It's an opportunity for you to become immersed in interesting organizations that don't require you to necessarily get on planes in order to participate. However, your involvement with Gemini does involve some international aspects to that. And I wonder what was attractive to you in having more international exposure by joining a board like that one?
It really often depends on the CIO's footprint at the company they're with. And since Texas Instruments has extensive presence in EMEA as well as Asia and Japan, it wasn't a stretch to get involved with Gemini, an Israeli-based company. And in fact, it actually helped because a lot of the things they were working on are things that were being piloted in other parts of the world. So that gave me a different viewpoint on some of the expertise that may reside in other areas and something to even think about from an IT standpoint when I'm looking at skill sourcing.
Again, having been a functional leader of multiple parts of the organization, and now as CIO, you've had to contemplate strategic planning from a variety of different perspectives. And I wonder now as CIO, how do you think about the strategic planning process for IT, and how do you weave that into the broader process of the organization?
That's a great question, Peter, and it goes directly to making sure that IT is aligned with the business roadmap. And I've been very fortunate at Texas Instruments to be part of our company's strategy leadership team, which is about 25 individuals, including our CEO and our entire C-suite, that meet twice a year to look at where the company's going and what changes would make sense to continue to be successful in the markets that we've identified. So coming out of those meetings, I have similar meetings with my leaders to talk about how we can provide enabling capabilities to support those strategies and objectives for the company. And then what we do to operationalize it is we actually look at a five-year plan that we share with a number of leaders in the company to help them understand not just the cost of the IT, but more importantly, the alignment of the roadmap, new capabilities that we're putting in place that intersect with business requirements over that time period, so that once we have alignment on that, we have a work product that we can go off and drive on. And clearly, we refresh it every year, but it allows you to make some of the tougher decisions where you're obsoleting something and you're moving to something new. And during that period of overlap, there's challenges in terms of the transition sometimes with business readiness And there may be additional cost as you continue to run two systems. But by having the business leaders on board with the value of getting to the other side, you can make those transitions with the right level of support from the business and an understanding that there's going to be new capability that they can take advantage of and leverage going forward. I think strategic planning for IT is a very important function, and it really takes what the business is asking for and turns it into how IT is going to line up and do it for them.
And yet another example, Brian, of a way in which you've taken your experiences with those other areas of the organization and brought some of those practices into the IT department and making sure that it is, in fact, a strategic function within the company aligned with the strategies of the relevant other parts of the organization and also.
Well, thank you, Peter. I like to think we're doing that, and I think that is the intent of doing it. It's really meant to drive that important discussion around those topics and have people understand what's possible. And it's an opportunity for IT to take a lead and suggest things that give the business new capabilities that they previously haven't enjoyed and get agreement that that's a cost or an investment that's worth undertaking.
Just one last question for you, Brian. Just given the vast array of things that you're exposed to, and as you pointed out, the advantage of the different array of experiences that you've had, the fact that it allows you to keep your fingers on the pulse of where innovation is happening, are there some trends in IT, perhaps some of the ones you've already mentioned, but others as well, that you're particularly excited about as you contemplate the next several years in thinking about IT innovation?
Yeah, I think the ones that I've already mentioned are definitely the ones that everybody is talking about, when you know, big data, cloud computing, analytics, and if you add to that mobile and social, you've pretty much got just about everything that any conference on IT talks about these. I guess what I would say to folks in IT is that any year or any decade, there's going to be a list of those cool new technologies, but they're only as cool as the organization's ability to find innovative business grounded uses for them. So I like the rate with which you can implement things, because I think that's one trend in IT that's continuing, is you can do things faster than you could 10 years ago, and in 10 years from now, we'll do it even faster. But we don't want to be in a position where, as an IT organization, we've found a hammer and everything we're trying to do or everything we're looking at looks like a nail. These are just tools to do different things that relate to the overall business strategy. So that's the very important piece of it, is that something might be really cool and innovative, but the company may already have a solution that's good enough for where they are in time, and the IT team would be much better off working at closing a gap in another area rather than pushing an innovative concept that may not have as much lift as it could have in the company if it was something that was delivering new business capability. So that's the footnote I add to that. But having said that, it is a wonderful time to be in IT, because the importance of it for most corporations now and the capabilities that are available for IT professionals have never been better. And if you're savvy enough to navigate between what the business wants and what can be capably delivered, it's a really fun business to be in, and there's a lot of exciting new things that you can personally say you've enabled for the company.
Well, Brian Bonner, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing a bit about your experience and so many of your perspectives. I think it's really been a wonderful conversation.
Likewise, Peter. It was great talking to you, and look forward to staying in touch with you in the future. Thank you.
Again, having been a functional leader of multiple parts of the organization, and now as CIO, you've had to contemplate strategic planning from a variety of different perspectives. And I wonder now, as CIO, how do you think about the strategic planning process for IT, and how do you weave that into the broader process of the organization?
That's a great question, Peter, and it goes directly to making sure that IT is aligned with the business roadmap. And I've been very fortunate at Texas Instruments to be part of our company's strategy leadership team, which is about 25 individuals, including our CEO and our entire C-suite, that meet twice a year to look at where the company's going and what changes would make sense to continue to be successful in the markets that we've identified. So coming out of those meetings, I have similar meetings with my leaders to talk about how we can provide enabling capabilities to support those strategies and objectives for the company. And then what we do to operationalize it is we actually look at a five-year plan that we share with a number of leaders in the company to help them understand not just the cost of the IT, but more importantly, the alignment of the roadmap, new capabilities that we're putting in place that intersect with business requirements over that time period, so that once we have alignment on that, we have a work product that we can go off and drive on. And clearly, we refresh it every year, but it allows you to make some of the tougher decisions where you're obsoleting something and you're moving to something new. And during that period of overlap, there's challenges in terms of the transition sometimes with business readiness, and there may be additional cost as you continue to run two systems. But by having the business leaders on board with the value of getting to the other side, you can make those transitions with the right level of support from the business and an understanding that there's going to be new capability that they can take advantage of and leverage going forward. I think strategic planning for IT is a very important function, and it really takes what the business is asking for and turns it into how IT is going to line up and do it for them.
And yet another example, Brian, of a way in which you've taken your experiences with those other areas of the organization and brought some of those practices into the IT department and making sure that it is, in fact, a strategic function within the company aligned with the strategies of the relevant other parts of the organization also.
Well, thank you, Peter. I like to think we're doing that, and I think that is the intent of doing it. It's really meant to drive that important discussion around those topics and have people understand what's possible. And it's an opportunity for IT to take a lead and suggest things that give the business new capabilities that they previously haven't enjoyed and get agreement that that's a cost or an investment that's worth undertaking.
The Forum on World-Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat is a catalyst in communities of customers, contributors, and partners creating better technology the open source way. Connect to an ecosystem of innovation at redhat.com today to learn more. Just listen to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World-Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy-setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.